Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez, and we are ready to talk about Jetty sanity, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, I just figure, you know, we can probably go up to 3 podcasts a day here pretty soon. but, you know, of course, after hopping on with the Lakers boys, it was time to give the Cavs a little TLC as the Jetty breakout continues.
It was funny because we were discussing this. So we had the Pelicans podcast kind of ready to go last week. And then we had kind of our first real fun game where it was Love, Jetty, and Sexton playing well. And then back-to-back wins. And then kind of as this Portland game started, I was like, of course, on the night of the podcast, the Cavs just lay an absolute egg. And all that kind of fun forward momentum that we had to talk about goes out the window. But the Cavs really turned it around. They erased, I think it was like a 23-point lead, got within a single possession. Jetty played great with 27 points on 16 shots. Love with 18 and 12, which was helped pretty greatly by his three-point attempts and the free throw line. Sexton, not the best game, but his bad games aren't as bad as they used to be. Like, they still seem like he's understanding how to run the team a little bit better and play within the structured offense. So even when he's playing poorly, it's not as disastrous as it was before.
Yeah. I said something along these lines in the recap for Fear the Sword tonight. Maybe the try-hard Cavs are back a little bit. Where this is a team that early in the season, they would mostly maintain contact, even if things didn't look good early on. And, you know, even if they lost, it would mostly be because, you know, games slipped out of their hands a little bit. Whereas mid-season, when, you know, we had a lot of Jalen Jones and Jaron Blossom game and all these guys, you know, it was just like, kind of not competitive from the jump and never got there. Getting to the competitive Cavs is kind of what I want out of a viewing experience. You know, like if they're not going to win, I can at least see Jetty drop 27 points on 10 of 16 shooting.
Right.
Slashing, and these fouls, playing well.
These are the Cavs that I predicted when I said, you know what, I'm ready for LeBron to leave. Yeah. Bad, but entertaining. And they're finally delivering on that. And some of that can probably be correlated to Kevin Love coming back into the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, he just makes everyone look so much better, even on a night like tonight where, you know, 18 and 12, not a particularly strong day, 5-14 from the field. But, you know, just having him out there, you know, he just kind of changes the pace at which with which everyone on the team is moving. I know that's a kind of a nebulous, weird thing to say, but I kind of feel it. Don't you just feel like everyone is just a little more athletic, a little more talented with him out there?
Right. Well, people know that when you have Kevin Love out there, it really helps the secondary passing for the team. Like, guys are more likely to move off ball if they feel there's a chance that they're going to be able to get the ball. And that just wasn't reality for a long portion of this season. Like, when it's Jalen Jones, thank you, and Blossom game.
Sorry to the family of Jalen Jones, who we know listens to every episode.
Like, those are guys that are looking down at the ground as they dribble. Like, there wasn't a lot of on-court awareness, and Sexton didn't exactly have great vision either. And with Love being out there, with Jetty playing with more confidence and kind of playing freer here, the ball just has a little more zip to it, and I think you see that guys are just, they're more active, they're doing the little things, and it's kind of infectious.
Was that Jetty's best game of the year?
I think it's up there. I know it's not his career high, and he's had some games where he's a little bit higher in the assist column, so for that reason I'm a little hesitant to deem it that, but this is starting to become a thing. Like, we are kind of on the verge here of 2 months of Jetty playing at a pretty encouraging level. And Mike from our Discord chat, I think he summed it up pretty well when he said today that if Jetty is like a legitimate starter And is playing at this caliber, it can really shorten our rebuild if you hit on kind of this next pick here.
Yeah. I mean, like just in his last 10 games, he's got an 11 of 20 game, a 10 of 16 game, a 5 of 10, a 7 of 12, a 10 of 16. Like, and oftentimes with pretty solid volume and accuracy from distance. I think the reason I asked the question is that his ability to get to the rim in this game was, it was just really impressive.
And the finishing at the rim once he gets
there. There was a stretch in the fourth quarter when he was really cooking where he kind of got the ball, I think it was on a tip out, and he had Nurkic on him, and he had this body language of like, oh no, I'm not passing this. I'm gonna cook this guy. And that was really, really encouraging and fun to watch out of him, for a guy who, you know, last year couldn't dribble. and, you know, he's still not perfect. He still doesn't get to the line at a particularly high rate. And his finishing is always going to be a little hampered because of that. You know, getting to the line is one of the best ways you can be more efficient when you're attacking the cup. But with the jumper looking this good, and he had a couple high degree of difficulty, Korver-esque ones that he made tonight, but really it was the attacking that had me the most impressed. I don't know about you.
No, absolutely. And that was one thing we had noticed earlier in the season, was that he did have an improved ability to get to the rim and get where he wanted to on the floor. I think some of that was hurt as the season progressed, both by him having the back issues that he had, as well as just not having as much spacing on the floor. I think that really started to hurt him at some point there. And the fact that those two things happened at the same time certainly didn't help either. But he's getting more creative with his finishes. And you know what? Sexton is too. And that's something that we've seen.
Tough night to mention that, is that he did not make a two-point field goal.
it's the overall trend, right? And Spencer Davies has tweeted out a few times of just like Sexton and Jetty after hours working on finishing, like learning how to be less predictable with how they finish. And like Jetty's little up and under scoop shots and stuff like that, like some of it, I don't want to say it reminds me of Kyrie, but it's just a level of creativity that we haven't seen.
Well, thank God he didn't say it. I've just been really impressed with him. He's kind of has more of a plan when he's going to the hoop, and is kind of slowing down once he gets there, to the point where he's not kind of slamming it off the back of the backboard to half court anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, a little more touch, a little more English. And I think that's just a matter of work, and it's a matter of comfort. You know, we forget that, again, couldn't dribble last year, didn't play this style. And even for Turkey, I mean, he plays a little bit more point forward, but a lot of it's pulling jumpers as opposed to finishing at the cup a ton. So, you know, this is still a new role for him, and it's fair to have expected him to have a few bumps in the road and some growing pains while he tried to figure things out.
No, absolutely. And it's something that we had talked about too, is that this is the year that you're really going to see kind of the work that Jetty put in, and kind of how it pays off. So he had added new things to his game, but how he decided to use it, how he learned how to pick his spots, that was all going to be really, really important. And what have you thought of his defense? Because after Kevin Love coming back in the lineup and him not playing as much power forward, it seems like, and I don't know if it's backed up with numbers, but and even if it is, I'm sure it's a small sample size, so it probably doesn't mean a ton. But it feels like he's playing better defense. At least that's kind of what the eye test is telling me.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that they're playing teams that are trying to lose on purpose.
That does help. But I mean,
but you know, to that end, I don't want to completely dismiss it. I think him not playing the four as much is really, really helpful, because boy, was he kind of in a no-win spot there. You know, he still is going to get cooked from time to time, just like everyone else on this team. And there's never going to be help behind him, and it's always going to make him look worse. But, you know, I do think he's looked better. I think, you know, ideally you kind of want him actually on guards, where his length and speed and foot speed are more of a factor than his physical strength, which are not a factor at all.
Right, right.
Is not a factor. I pluralized a thing that was singular. So, yeah, I mean, defensively, I it's so hard, because everyone on this Cavs team is so shitty defensively that it's kind of impossible to
contextualize
how anyone's doing on that end other than like just a rough blanket bad.
Hey, that was a nice defensive play, but the overall is just a mess.
Yeah, I mean, like, ultimately, like, I mean, the Blazers shot fucking 18 of 29 from three in this game. So they pretty much got whatever they wanted most of the time. And, I mean, that's really where I want to kind of see going into next year. I mean, obviously, we're going to have a new coaching staff installed and ideally a better defensive scheme installed. But also, I just want to see Colin Sexton rise to the challenge a little bit. I mean, it was like Thanksgiving Day for Lillard and McCollum every time they had him matched up, you know? It was just so easy for them, and they combined for 56 points on 31 shots.
Yeah. So one thing before we move off, Jetty, I just did a little bit of number crunching here. By number crunching, I mean addition.
I had a feeling you were stalling me out here.
you can tell when I'm trying to think, when I'm trying to do math. Is that what this
is? You're less involved in the conversation. But that's
So since the beginning of January, he's up to 50% shooting from the field and just under 42% from three. Like, that's a long, encouraging stretch, and that's really, really nice. I also want to give a nice little fuck you to Nurkic, who Anthony Lima had tweeted out that Nurkic in a huddle just ripped Sexton, that he talks a lot of shit for a guy who doesn't belong in the NBA. Which I guess he's just kind of like repurposing the Ben Simmons slander. Like, did he think that was good trash talk and he was going to try it on for size? Like, what's going on here?
Wow. I didn't see that. That's crazy. I mean, Texan annoys the shit out of everyone, so that's not that surprising. I mean, and this was not the performance that Colin Sexton's going to rebut with when he tells him what an NBA player he is. You know, I do think, if you'll permit me to be a bit of a Buzz Killington.
Oh, that's so out of character for you, but yes, please proceed.
Sexton's had he's just been a total rookie, you know, the last six games. It's been really kind of fun in its own way, so I don't even want to be a buzzkill about it, but it's like, you know, he goes for 20 against New York, but has to take 21 shots, has that amazing first three quarters against Brooklyn, and then kind of falls apart down in fourth and triple OT. And then pretty big stinker, to be honest, against Phoenix, and pretty big stinker tonight against Portland. He's just, you know, that's kind of the next step in his development is, hey, I'm having a good stretch. How can I do it consistently?
Right. And we talked about it earlier. You're probably not going to see a jump midseason, because one thing I think people don't recognize or fully understand is just how little practicing these guys actually get to do. Like, between traveling and kind of the mandatory rest days and stuff, like, they'll go through shoot-arounds and they'll look at a little bit of film. But there really isn't an opportunity for these guys to take a step back, work on their game, add strength. Like, at this point, it's just maintaining whatever you got going. And it's tough. Like, I think your assessment's accurate that he's just been a rookie lately. And I think it's been an encouraging stretch overall. And as I mentioned before, it seems like his bad games aren't as bad, and he's not really forcing things in the same way. But there's certainly going to be growing pains. The one thing that is really encouraging for me, though, is just how good his three-point shot looks. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing I wanted to talk about with them before we wrap tonight, is the kind of threes they're generating for him. I mean, he was coming off some flare screens to looking to shoot. And it's almost like the thing that he's, you know, the most comfortable with right now is the spot up three. You know, when he goes up, I kind of expect it to go in. It is the other parts of the game that are actually waiting to catch up right now. Now, the off the dribble three, that's still, it's not happening. But, yeah. You know, he is doing good at kind of setting his feet, making sure his body's right, even when he's catching on the move. And he's converting at a pretty good rate, you know, 3 of 8 from three, 4 of 6 from three, 2 of 5. He did have that 2 of 8 against New York and that stinker. But otherwise, he's mostly been hitting at least 2 to 3 threes a game on not too many attempts, but enough attempts. You know, it's a weird balance for him where he has to get enough shots up to make the defense respect him and develop his game without being Marcus Smart shooting like 15, you know?
And so if you look at it,
he's towing that line really well.
Yeah, if you look at his progression, I mean, November, he was attempting literally 1 3 a game. In December, that went up to just under 2. Stayed about the same in January. I'm reading this backwards. Give me a moment. So October, it was at 1 a game. It was at 1 a game for November. December, you got up to just over 2. And then in January, 3.5 threes a game, 41.5%. And then come February, we're up to over 5 three-point attempts a game, and he's shooting just about 43%. So I think some of that has to be attributed to having Kevin Love out there for these games. That seems to help the passing. It helps generate more spot-up attempts. But I think we do have to give some credit to the coaching staff in getting him more spot-up looks. Because the fact that he's having games where he's taking 7 or 8 threes here, that's encouraging. Like, that's a much, much better shot selection. And as you mentioned, he's not yet capable of taking those shots off the dribble. But that's going to come in the offseason. But the fact that he seems to be able to hit threes at a pretty high volume here, it's really, really encouraging. Like, it shows you that his touch isn't just broken. Like, this isn't the Lonzo Ball hitting 7 threes in one game and then none for the rest of the month. This feels a little bit more legitimate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I still would like to see the form adjusted. And I know that's my biggest concern, and this is buzzkilly, is to say he thinks he's making enough so he doesn't have to adjust that form. But that guide hand still comes right across the face of the ball and almost slaps his hands together on the release. And it's a really awkward looking thing that I worry long-term about its repeatability. It's like,
well, while you're being a buzzkill, he's actually hitting each of these shots as a contested shot because he's contesting his own shot. So
fair. You know,
take that into consideration.
Yeah. I hope he doesn't take the wrong takeaways here. Cause the right takeaway, in my opinion, is I have enough touch to be a good shooter. I just have to clean up my mechanics and I will become one. This works for me. I don't need to change.
You know, I think that is a good point. Like, it is tempting in life to get a little complacent when things are going well, and you never take into consideration when things go bad. But
people literally let Sean Marion say, "I make him this way," his whole career.
But I mean, I guess the same thing can also be applied to our listeners. Like, if things are going well in life, that's great. But you also have to kind of plan for those rainy days whenever they come up. Isn't that right, Carter?
Yeah, Justin. As you may have heard, life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At getethos.com. There are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. $1 million. Man, it's crazy stuff, Justin. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply. You can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day, Justin. That's less than a cup of one coffee per day.
One cup of coffee?
Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. I like that sentence a lot. I like that that's in the read. It has a nice rhythm to it. You know, having, but getting. Good work from the copywriter there. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's ETHOS. Getethos.com. Getethos.com.
Man, speaking of things going bad when you don't expect them to go that bad, I remember just 2 days ago, or however many days ago it was, I don't really remember the day, barking at my Twitter feed saying, listen, the Grizzlies don't have Jaren Jackson Jr. You can't expect the Cavs to tank to that level. Like, it's incomprehensible with how bad this team has been to even lower ourselves to that level. 6 minutes left. The Grizzlies are up 2 points on the Lakers. So that could potentially be funny.
Or LeBron might be. I referenced it earlier in the day, but we did hop on the Lake Show podcast with Harrison Fagan and Anthony Irwin this early afternoon to talk about the LeBron fandom experience and to victory lap on their asses, because we were right about everything about how this LeBron experience would go. So if you're interested in checking us out, please check out the Lake Show podcast. All right, back to your point. Sorry, Justin.
It wasn't really a point. It was just a way to segue off of a live read, which I think we slayed that one. I think we're getting
better. I agree too. We live, you slid off the live read, and then I gave you another live read for a different podcast. So a little podception there. It is a little interesting. Speaking of the Grizzlies, who are awful. But not even close to the Cavaliers in the wins race, thank God. But you know, they are, you know, in a little bit of a tank off, and they're the only ones that seem to be trying to win. Though the Knicks, Suns, actually, I am a stone cold liar, Justin, because after a 15 game losing streak, I think out of the Suns and like a 17 for the Knicks. The Suns have won their last game. The Knicks have won their last game. The Bulls have won 3 in a row. What are they doing? Otto Porter made them just a little bit too good. And all of a sudden, all this hand-wringing about Kevin Love's impact starts to feel a little less terrible.
Yeah, your boy has not been concerned. The Cavs have the most difficult... The Cavs have had, or they have the most difficult schedule coming up out of the tanking teams, which I think is going to help them a lot. Yes.
That's the kind of research you get out of the Chase Down pod from at least one half of us at any given time. I mean, ideally you do want to play those teams that are trying to get into the playoffs, but Cavs are probably going to win some games they shouldn't down the stretch. And, you know, again, it would stink to fall in the draft, but the incentives just kind of aren't there. And ultimately, I don't know what you would want them to do. How would the Cavs even tank if they wanted to? Is it just shut Kevin Love down when he's healthy? Because I believe you get fined for that. They tell me that in New Orleans.
J.R. Smith might have something to say about that.
He has to agree. That's the thing. Like, is Kevin Love going to agree just to not work after talking about how empty his life is without basketball like a week ago?
I think the way to tank would be to bring back J.R. Smith. I just had that light bulb. Bring him into the locker room and see what happens from there. I think that would be kind of the trump card there. But yeah, you're right. The incentive isn't there. We say this every single podcast, but there is almost no chance that the Cavs can catch Atlanta. The very worst case scenario would be for them to fall to 4. And I just think the Bulls right now, I think they're a little more cohesive and they're a little more talented than the Cavs overall.
They're also stupid, so they're definitely trying to win.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they probably don't know math. Like, they're worse than me. I can at least keep up the illusion that I'm doing a podcast when I'm doing math. The Bulls, no. They're too busy playing basketball. They don't know the math. They don't know that they basically have no chance of making the playoffs, but they're going to try for it, by God.
Yeah, it's there. That's the kind of franchise that is. They're not really interested in the long game or, you know, doing anything right. They're just kind of hoping people in Chicago keep showing up and paying money to get in. And as long as that happens, they're going to be happy. So it does feel like, do you feel like this is the slot the Cavs finish in, the 3 slot?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So
there's no way they're catching the Knicks or Suns. I know they're only a game and a half and 2.5 games, respectively, from the Knicks and Suns. Those teams are losing on purpose for the most part.
Yeah, well, I don't think teams are necessarily lose on purpose. Like, I don't think the players ever make that conscious decision.
No, they don't.
And the Knicks probably did get better as well in adding DeAndre Jordan, just because Kristaps Porzingis wasn't playing. And I think Dennis Smith Jr. has been good for them. I think that would be the only team that there's like a slight chance of catching would be the Knicks. Because I just think like the Suns, they have talented young guys, but they don't know how to contribute in a way that leads to winning yet. there's two games that'll kind of determine that in my mind. There's the one at the end of the month here against the Cavs, Cavs-Knicks, and then the Knicks will also play the Suns about a week later. And how those two games go. Like, it, if the Knicks win both of those games, I think kind of anything is possible. But ultimately, I think the Cavs are going to finish with the third least wins, or however you want to phrase that.
Third best odds in aggregate.
Right, which each of those slots comes with a 48% chance of falling out of the top four. And they all have identical odds at 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of nice in a weird way, is like, once you're not in the top three, it's like, who fucking cares?
Right.
Like, even if you drop all the way to 8, it's like, yeah, you don't get your guy, I guess. That stinks. But it's like, I just can't lose sleep about something that's that out of my control if I'm running the Cavs.
Yeah, you've dropped out of the tier where there's kind of the more sure things. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's... I forget what the exact stat was, but I think they said in the, like, the first 30 years of the lottery, the top player in terms of win shares has only... Yeah, I remember now. The top player in terms of win shares has only come from the number one pick 6 out of 30 times, and 7 out of 30 times it's come from a player outside of the lottery. So I think once you drop out of that kind of more sure tier, it's a crapshoot. It's a total... It's a lottery, pardon the phrase.
Let's just hope Trevor's right and Jarrett Culver is a super duper star.
Yeah, no. I've watched more of him as a result of that, because Trevor makes us smarter, and I've put his highlights into the rotation. I think I haven't watched much or any of Romeo Langford, but if I could buy him, then I'm going to feel a lot better about where the Cavs are standing.
Yeah, I agree. Though I have not watched any more Jarrett Culver than I was prior. I just wanted the UNC Duke game to be my scouting for the rest of the year.
You haven't watched any Culver since Trevor came on?
Not.
Have you watched any Cavs since Trevor came on?
You're so mean, bro. This is just because I said you didn't like LeBron, which you kind of don't.
Oh,
I'd no like comment. You to admit for everyone here, in front of God and everybody, that you kind of don't really like LeBron that much. Like, you appreciate, you are grateful, but like, deep in your heart of hearts, you're like, I could take or leave that guy.
So I think I've been pretty consistent that I don't believe having LeBron in your team, at least at
Did
this
your
point.
PR agent write this for you?
Yeah. Well, yes, because I got money to blow on a PAR agent. Oh, yeah. At this point of LeBron's career, I feel like it's not worth having him on your team if you're not title contender.
It's not worth the squeeze, you say.
Yes, it is not worth the squeeze, my friend. It's
crazy how wrong you are.
It's depressing. It feels like you're letting LeBron down.
Oh, come on. Too much, man. That's not why you don't want him. You don't want him because he annoys you.
Jetty, 27 points.
Jetty does not annoy us. That's absolutely right. So that's fair.
Every time you put me into this corner, I'm just going to yell out a positive Jetty fact. That's going to be.
I can't resist it.
I can't. It's just going to put you in a good mood. It's going to put a smile on your face.
I love that guy. His little flex after he yammed against the Grizzlies.
It was adorable.
It was so cute because you could tell he didn't want to hold it because he's like, I'm not very strong. Like, that was the shortest, like, flex yell, and then, okay, I'm done.
I'm going to send him videos of myself flexing in the gym wearing a Jetty jersey and tell him that it's comfortable.
It's like you're going out of your way to trigger me with this.
If I was going out of my way to trigger you, I would have mentioned that I was booching earlier today.
Oh, good booching. Do you get looks when you wear the Jetty jersey while you work out?
So I haven't actually worked out at a gym for a while. I just do it at home. So,
yikes.
Yeah. That was just an anecdote.
Like
that
bad Anada, am I right, fellas?
I was fake news, fake stories, just to make you mad, which... I mean, I think I'm pretty good at it.
You are so good at it. But that's okay. What else do we want to talk about? We got anything else? Let's do it. Let's keep moving.
So what have you thought of Kevin Love?
I don't know, man. It's funny because I don't really think he's playing all that different from how he played last year. But the thing that if you had told your average Twitter user that, they would think that's disappointing. But as a member of team Kevin Love's really fucking good island, I'm happy. You know, I don't think he's been like playing much differently. Do you?
No. I mean, the only thing you could point to is saying that there's more possessions where he touches the ball. At least it feels like that. He's getting a greater share of that.
But his involvement has not changed in its tenor. It's
not at all. And, well, I guess the only other change is when the clock is winding down, they throw it into him at the post and say, bail us the hell out, where normally that would be LeBron.
Yeah, it's not facilitating from the elbows. It's still duck-ins in the post, ceiling mismatches, pick and popping, maybe a little bit more playmaking at the point of attack above the break.
And I think that the whole misusing Kevin Love thing was outdated anyways. Like,
it was stupid.
I think that had been corrected. It was always
stupid, Justin.
Yeah, I think it had basically been corrected by the second year and for sure by the third year. Like 2017, they were maximizing.
Justin, he averaged 37 and 29 on a fucking 38-win team. They should get back to that.
His per 100 possession stats were very similar. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, he was really, really good in Minnesota, and he was really, really good on the Cavs in just a different kind of role. And now his game has changed, and that version of Kevin Love is still very, very helpful.
And I want to keep him for as long as humanly possible. Yep. I just have very, very little interest in trading him for spare parts.
As I said, I had a dream, and we traded him, and then I was sad. And it was for a good return, too. So I think that's bulletproof evidence that that I don't want to trade him, and any real trade would kind of be disappointing to me.
If Jetty takes like a leap next season and Sexton improves, this can be a really fun team if we hit on the draft pick. Like, imagine if you hit on both.
I'm just not there yet, man. I mean,
oh, I'm there. I'm all the
draft picks would be really, really nice, but those guys still can't help yet. I think the fun year is still 2 years from now.
See, I'm in on next year because
I guess it depends on your definition of fun.
Well, I think especially in the Eastern Conference that it could potentially be a borderline playoff team, and I think there's a few things you're discounting because the Cavs have looked a little bit better, and some of that is teams just not taking them as seriously. But I mean, they still don't have their second best player in Tristan Thompson right now. If they move him, that kind of changes things for me a little bit. But the other thing is, young guys taking a leap, you add a little more depth, and you also probably end up with a real head coach, and that might be able to make a difference. I mean, they have to kind of do well on that hire, but at the same time, I just don't think that you're going to get someone that's less interested and invested than Larry Drew.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost any coaching upgrade is going to be a good one, barring someone actively like helping the team regress. You did mention Tristan Thompson just now, and I want to pivot back to that. Is he going to play the rest of the year? I can't quite figure it out.
I think he is. I think we're probably... See, it's weird because I think it was still Lloyd that had reported that Tristan could have been playing a little while ago, and I think he will come back to the lineup at some point here. I think they're just being really, really careful with him. It's going to be really weird. I think both him and John Henson are going to play before the season's up. And I know Ante Zizic is doing a good job of being tall and doing things because he's tall. But I still like overall, I think he's pretty terrible.
Yeah. I said like tall guys soak up easy buckets in games that don't matter.
Yeah. And I think part of why we're losing, like part of why we're tanking is because we're still starting Ante. Like if the Cavs really wanted to win, they'd be playing Larry Nance Jr. out there with Kevin Love, which honestly, I'd like to see a little bit more of, but, I do think eventually Tristan and to some degree Henson are going to take some of those center minutes away.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I don't think Henson plays this year. In fact, I think it's actually quite possible Henson never plays for the Cavs.
Man, but he's so good, Carter. I thought he's one of your favorite players.
I never hated him. You just were acting like he was God's gift to basketball in his breakout season, averaging 5-4.
Man, he's going to be a big-time trade asset. Like, teams are going to move heaven and earth to get John Henson.
I mean, he actually will be probably as an expiring at the deadline if teams want to get off some big, stupid money. Though I still can't figure out if Dan's going to go into the tax for this team.
I think so. I think that he's motivated to get this team to respectable or better by the time the All-Star game comes. And the other thing is I think he wants to kind of show out with the new arena. I think that's going to be a big time factor there.
When is that done? Is that done next year?
Yeah, it's supposed to be done next year, which I think I'll be coming down to check that thing out. So that could be a lot of fun. And it'll be... Yeah, it'll be a nice second chapter to you coming up to Winnipeg this spring. So I'm really looking forward to that, man.
Man, you are setting yourself up for disappointment.
Well, I'm not the one setting myself up for disappointment. You're the one talking about how excited you are for Winnipeg. I just don't want it to let you down.
And that's all I'm going to say.
And that's all we're going to say. That's probably a good point to wrap this up. I want to thank all of our listeners. I will be away for the next two podcasts because I will be in Mexico as of tomorrow. So that I'm looking forward to. Carter will be manning the ship from there. So I want to thank all of our listeners. You guys have been awesome with your support. You got us up over 200 ratings on iTunes, and that was pretty exciting.
Brother.
For those that haven't yet left a rating, please do so. It honestly, it really, really helps with the reach. It's the best way to support the podcast along with supporting our sponsors. So leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And we'd be more than happy to send you a link to that. So, for Carter and myself, until next time, go Cavs.